This ESPN Radio Daily Podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. To get a free quote on car insurance, call 1-800-PROGRESSIVE or visit progressive.com. You could save hundreds. Now that's Progressive. This is the ESPN Radio Daily Podcast.
And have our first chance to say congratulations to the now four-time national champion men's head coach at Duke basketball. Here's Mike Krzyzewski back with us. Coach K, congratulations. Thanks for the time this morning.
Yeah, thanks, Green. I appreciate it very much. We're very excited about it, obviously.
Coach, take us through that game, especially, you know, toward the end. And just, you know, that Butler truly lived up to their nickname, the Bulldogs. They were right there in it the whole time. Just talk about the greatness of that game.
Well, I think greatness of a game is not, you know, like how many shots you hit and stuff like that, but the number of great plays different players make. And I thought everybody who was on the court for both teams made really good plays throughout, and there was never more than a 6-point differential. And right towards the end of the game, you know, they put us in a position where, you know, we had to make a couple plays. And we weren't able to make the shots. I thought we had ourselves set up well, but our kids who had been, you know, they were great, but we didn't make shots, and they made a couple shots. And then it came down to the end, and I thought the last 33 seconds, our defense was outstanding. And I think Zubac really, I don't know how sometimes the kid who is responsible for you eventually getting the whole thing, which was Zubac, he put us over. Put us in a position with all the other kids to where we had a chance to win the whole thing. And he was showcased in the last 30 seconds, 33 seconds, especially on defense. And, he out of bounds underneath, he forced a timeout and then got him to throw it outside. And, Singler was on Hayward, and Hayward comes over and, had to take a fadeaway, and, you know, Brian challenged the shot, got the rebound, got fouled, and we had 3.6 seconds. And, you know, we'd been playing the game with Zubac with four fouls for 9 minutes, and he and Lance Thomas for the last 5 minutes. And we just felt at the end that to get it to be one chaotic possession and it would stay in their half court if we could, you know, trust our defense again and not trust, the conventional sometimes thing is to, you know, one, he's got to hit the free throw, but, if he does, there's 3.6 and they're well schooled. They're going to do something. And we didn't want the game to go to overtime, if it did. So I, probably took a little bit of a chance, but, I trusted my guys and we won.
There really is the answer to the question we were going to. It is, and that's the question we were going to go to next. We had a lengthy discussion about this yesterday about the decision to miss that free throw at the end. And I'll be honest, Coach, I was completely on the other side. It seems to me,
I don't think, yeah, I don't disagree with you. And but you know what it is you have to, you know, in coaching, you have to go with the nature of the game and your instincts. And I'm not saying I wouldn't do that in another situation. In this situation, I thought about it from the time Brian got fouled, and I didn't want, I knew they would be prepared, especially after a make, because it stops. But if there is a miss, that there would be, they were still prepared, but they're only prepared to take a desperation shot. And we were matched up with every one of their shooters. And you know, I mean, he got open. They would never call the foul, but, you know, Kyle got blown out on that play. And, you know, what the hell, you know. in those situations, I mean, that's what we do, you know. I mean, it's never completely right or completely wrong. And that's why you guys have a show, is to talk about this. And I think both situations are correct. This is a little bit chancy, but I couldn't deal with the outcome of going into overtime. So that was not part of it, because I think we lose in overtime with David and Goliath and the crowd, the foul trouble. You know, I think the game had to end then. And so that was my choice, and I was willing to live with it. And obviously I'm living with it in a good way. That's why we're lucky enough to be in those situations.
It's a great answer to the question. Yep. Mike and Coach Kane. Coach, we're very limited on time, but the other discussion yesterday was about what this win means for your place in history with your fourth championship, more now than your mentor Bob Knight, only trailing John Wooden. To you, what did this win mean for your legacy?
Well, it just cemented the fact that I am really a lucky Polish guy from Chicago. I really don't think about those things. Because if Coach Knight would still be at Indiana, he'd have about 6 NCAA championships and about 1,050 wins. So my feeling is just enjoy your own ride and let other people talk about the other things. And thank goodness, I mean, how lucky are you, or am I? How lucky am I to be in that talk? I mean, and just leave it as that, because I still want to accomplish more with my next team. You know, I don't want to live in the past, and I want to continue to get better and you know, learn the game more and have fun with the game. And if I start thinking about, you know, my place in history, then might as well, you know, start, you know, digging the hole, you know. I don't want to do that.
Krzyzewski, well, we knew you'd say that. I hate to keep cutting you off, but I have to let you go in 30 seconds. There is all that you talk about next year and your next season with Duke. There were these stories about the New Jersey Nets ready to offer you what could only be described as a pile of money. Is that a phone call you would even take?
Well, you had the respect of taking anybody's phone call. That phone call has never been made and probably won't be made, but that's not something I'm interested in. It would be flattering to receive a phone call. But that's not the direction that I want to go in. You know, I want to stay in the direction that I'm in right now.
It'd be really nice to hear that amount of money, though, said over
Seriously.
The phone.
if they call you, yeah. Tell them to call
tell
us.
Tell them to call us.
And offer us the money.
Well,
Coach, congratulations.
If they want to make a donation to you guys.
Exactly.
We have to let you go. Coach, thanks.
Thanks,
Coach. Again, congratulations.
All right. Best of luck with the tour. Philly's a great city.
Thank you, Coach. There's Mike Krzyzewski. Got to let him go. He's on SportsCenter.
Yeah, he's got to go on SportsCenter.
We have limitations in time, and we apologize, but he answered really everything
he
wanted to get, including, he said it, he thinks in overtime they lose.
Yeah, that's right. That was part of the strategy.
That answered my question.
To compare car insurance rates from top insurers in one easy place, visit Progressive.com today. You could save hundreds. Now that's Progressive.
Star junior Maya Moore, who was without a doubt the star of the national title game, 23 points, 11 rebounds. Maya, back-to-back, congratulations.
Thank you so much. We're so excited.
All right, now take me through the first half here. You guys go 10 minutes without scoring from like the 17-minute mark to the 7-minute mark. What's going through your head when nothing is falling for you?
Oh, it was the strangest feeling ever. I don't know what team was out there that first half, but I don't think we could have played any worse. So, you know, going into halftime, we just had to leave that team in the locker room and come out with a whole different mindset, and we responded and came back.
What was said at halftime?
You know, as far as motivation goes, we didn't really need a whole lot of that. We knew what we had to do. It was a lot of just X's and O's, just little details that we had to clean up, and you know, we just came out with just an attack mentality in the second half, and that made the difference.
Now, I saw head coach Gino Auriemma said after the game, he was asked, what did you tell the team at halftime? And he said, for one of the first times, I was speechless. Was he really speechless at halftime?
In some ways. I mean, there really wasn't much you could say about that first half. It was just so horrible on our end, but, you know, you know, one of the things they stressed was we played as horrible as we did, but we were only down 8. So we knew that we were capable of so much more, and we were just glad we didn't get ourselves in too big of a hole.
Did you ever lose confidence at any point during the game?
No, we knew that wasn't us, you know, in the first half, and we knew we were capable of so much more, and I'm just glad that we showed it, and you know, a lot of people stepped up, hit big shots. Tina was blocking shots left and right, and, you know, once we got our momentum going, we never looked back.
Now, you had 11 of the first 17 points in the second half. What did you eat at halftime? What did you do? Because I want to follow your routine for the next couple of days.
I wish I could tell you. Man, just did our same routine. Took some, got rehydrated, put some heat on my knees, and just went out and went to work.
Maya Moore, star of UConn's women's basketball team, is with us. It's All Night with Jason Smith on ESPN Radio and ESPNRadio.com. UConn celebrating their second straight national championship and 78-game winning streak. Does this? How much does a streak weigh over you when you hear about it so much as you do?
I mean, we never want to lose, so it's not really anything new or outrageous for us. It's the mentality that we've had, you know, every game for the last few seasons, and we're glad that, you know, we're still undefeated, and that's our goal, you know, to win a national championship and not to lose a game. So that's what we're going to keep doing.
When you get down and you're not playing well, do you find yourself thinking, boy, 70-some-odd games, 75, 76, we got to get it going here, 78, we have a lot more at stake than just winning this game?
Not at that point. You're not really putting, you know, that kind of pressure on yourself. You just want to play well. You want to execute. And, I mean, if at the end of the game, that's when you can think about all that kind of stuff. I'm just glad that we're able to think about it, still undefeated.
All right, now how are you going to celebrate tonight? That's a big thing.
Oh, man, I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to be going to sleep tonight. I'm so excited.
When you know, the funny thing is, I mentioned this early in the show tonight, just because of how dominant you've been, this is the first game in your streak that you haven't won by double digits. Did you know that?
Yeah, we did. We missed about 5 million free throws, so we definitely could have. But, you know, Stanford's tough. They hit some big threes at the end, and they never gave up.
Well, this is where I was. When they pulled within 10, when they hit that bank three that went in that made it, I think it was, you know, 47-37 with about a minute and a half left to go, I swear to you, I thought for a second, boy, UConn could be in trouble here. Just because you win every game by 50 points, I thought, boy, they're within 10, maybe. And meanwhile, of course, 10 points with a minute and a half left to go, but this is the bar you guys have set.
Right. That's the bar we set for ourselves, and we know we're capable of it. It's just a matter of going out and executing. But, you know, hats off to Stanford. They fought. They came out with everything that they had, and they made it tough for us.
Maya Moore, 23 points, 11 rebounds, back-to-back national championships for UConn. They'll work on that 78-game streak coming up later on this year. Maya, congratulations. Enjoy the night. If you don't get any sleep, you don't get any sleep. It's one of those nights.
That's right. Thank you, guys.
The Herd on ESPN Radio and ESPNRadio.com.
Earlier in the week, we talked about LeBron James this year is having a season many think is the greatest season for any individual player ever since Jordan, I think in the mid-90s. Well, listen to this. Stephen Curry, a rookie, has become the first NBA rookie since Michael Jordan and only the third rookie in NBA history to have five games with at least 30 points and 10 assists for the Warriors. And by the way, in March, he averaged 20 points, 7 assists, and 2 steals a game. The guy's absolutely money. Stephen Curry of the Warriors joining us in the Herd on ESPN Radio. So what is the, you know, Stephen, obviously you're a great college player. You go to the, your dad played in the NBA. You go to the NBA. You kind of knew the league. What has been the biggest adjustment college to pro?
I mean, probably just going through the length of the season yourself. There's 82 games, and you're having back-to-backs and traveling and all that kind of stuff. So off the court is as important on the court. So try to maintain your body over the course of the season so you can, you know, play consistent enough to put yourself in a good position. So that's probably the biggest adjustment.
Did your dad help you a lot with that and talk about taking care of your body and nutrition and sleep and that sort of stuff?
Yeah, early in the year, he just kind of drove home that that was going to be important down the stretch. I mean, yeah, as a rookie, you came in thinking you're on top of the world and could, you know, just play for days and not get tired. But after like the first month and a half, you kind of, you know, figure out it's going to be a challenge to maintain yourself over the course of the year.
Stephen Curry, who could be the rookie of the year, putting up huge 20-point-a-game numbers. Okay, you've been on the court with LeBron. You've been on the court with Kobe Bryant. What's the difference?
LeBron, you don't really know, you know, what to expect with him because he's so athletic. He can get the ball, go coast to coast in 2 seconds and dunk it on you, or he's starting to shoot the three ball now. It's all sorts of stuff that he does, that you really can't defend, really. It's just a matter if he has an off night or not. But, you know, Kobe, He's more of the skill set of, you know, getting to where he wants on the floor and making you play one-on-one defense against him, and not many people can guard that. So, you know, LeBron's just a freak athlete, and Kobe's just, you know, the best skill set in the league. So either one of them, take your pick.
Yeah, I mean, when you say, and I've always felt that Kobe's got the best skill set in the league, the first time you got one-on-one with Kobe in the angle and you had to defend him, I mean, you're a kid coming out of college, you watch Kobe on TV, you get in the angle, Stephen Curry goes over, there's Kobe. I mean, did anything go through your mind?
Try to get a stop. Basically, I was in the post, and he caught it. He felt like there was a mismatch, so I, you know, my pride was a little hurt. I was like, all right, I'm going to try to guard you now. And then I think he did a spin move, and thankfully one of my big men was behind me to alter the shot. So I was just kind of, you know, enjoying the situation and the challenge to guard Kobe Bryant, somebody I watched growing up.
Okay, I'm going to give you the matchups here in the first round of the NBA playoffs, and you just give me your kind of gut feeling. These are best of seven, Stephen. Lakers play Portland. Who do you like? How many games?
Lakers in six.
Ooh, why? You think Portland wins two in Portland?
Yeah, they play very well at home, and I think they'll sneak a couple.
Okay, I'm going to give you another. You can give me a sentence after every playoff series. Utah, Oklahoma City, who do you like and why?
I like Utah in seven because Kevin Durant's such a great player and gives them a position to win, but it's going to be tough to get that seventh game in Utah.
Yeah, good call. This one's tough to me. It's kind of a coin flip. Dallas, a three against San Antonio, a six seed. Who do you like and why?
I like San Antonio in six. I think Tony Parker just played his first game last night, I believe. So I think he'll be somewhat healthy and somewhat ready to get back in there, and their winning experience is going to take them over the top.
All right, good series. Phoenix against Denver wraps up the West. Who do you like and why?
I like Denver in long series in the West. I'm going to go Denver in six.
Okay, you know what? One of my favorite guys in the league is Chauncey Billups. I think he's the most underrated dude in the league. Do you know Chauncey at all?
Just from playing in the three-point shootout with him and talking to him then.
Yeah. Okay, here we go in the East. Cleveland-Toronto. Is that a Cleveland sweep?
Cleveland sweep, no doubt.
Orlando-Charlotte. Is that an Orlando sweep?
Orlando in five.
Okay. Boston-Milwaukee, Bogut's hurt. How many does that go?
Boston in five.
Okay, Atlanta-Miami. I'll take Atlanta in five. Who do you like and why?
I think they'll sweep. I'm going to go five. I'll take that back. So I'm going to go with you, Colin, on that one. Just because D-Wade's going to win a game or two at least for him by himself. But Atlanta has, you know, too many threats. So,
okay, now. Okay. I have Stephen Curry joining us. I have Orlando beating the Lakers in seven in the finals. Who do you have in the finals and why?
I have Cleveland, and I have Cleveland and Denver.
Ooh.
I like Chauncey as well. That's him and
Melo.
And Carmelo. I was going to blank there. Chauncey and Carmelo, they've been hungry for, you know, championship these last couple of years. So I think they get over the top. They're going to want to be the ones to beat LA in the conference finals. Or I don't know if they played in the finals of the second round, but and then Cleveland. Same reason LeBron's hungry to get there. So it's going to be a good series.
Stephen, good talking to you. He likes and then do you like Cleveland to beat Denver, you said?
Yes.
Yeah.
So Cleveland's going to get the championship, and then that's going to see where we take LeBron in the offseason.
Good talking to you, bud.
Hey, you too, Colin. Thanks, man.
Let's talk a little baseball. Joe Morgan, the Hall of Famer, visited with us every week. It was a good time. We start that up again today, and Joe joins us now via the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Joe, good to talk with you. How are you?
I'm good, Ryan. Say hello to Mash for me.
I will. I'll be sure to do that. He'll be, as you said, dropping by in a little bit. When I watched the opening day stuff, you know, Sunday night into all day on Monday, and all these guys are hitting home runs, I'm thinking, man, it must feel great to just feel really good on that first day of baseball. How good do you feel that first day health-wise in comparison to some of the stuff that starts dragging you down in the summer?
Well, you know, the only time I missed a game, Ryan, is opening day and the first game of the World Series. You know, I wish those 2 days were always pretty special to me. You know, after spring training, you've been there working hard all these weeks, and, you know, when it really doesn't count, you're so excited, you know, to do something that really counts. You're ready to play for real. And your adrenaline, I mean, your level is so high that that first game, I'm surprised that there aren't more home runs hit, because guys are so strong, they feel so good coming out of spring training, they swing so hard, because most of the places you go in spring training is pretty warm, and it kind of saps your energy a little bit. Mm-hmm. Then when you go north to play these games, it's going to be a little cooler. So as long as it's not cold, you feel great about, you know, playing that opening day.
See, the weather thing surprised me you'd say that, because I would think now, with so many Latin American players playing the game, that they would, you know, I don't know, you hear it every now and then, like, oh, you got to wait until it gets a little bit warmer for them to feel better about playing the game. Is that something that's just wrong?
I don't think it's wrong. It's your environment that you were brought up in, you know. You were brought up playing baseball in hot weather, so you feel more comfortable playing it in hot weather. Now, you know, I grew up in America, but I still felt better playing it, you know, in Cincinnati in the summer than I did, you know, at the end of the season. But remember now, the weather's been good. I did the game in Boston on Sunday, and it was 70-something degrees. I was in Houston yesterday on Monday to do a game, and it was 80-something degrees. So a lot of these places have not experienced what we normally catch in the opening of the season, where it's real cold. I mean, even Minnesota, when they had their exhibition games, it was warm. So I think we're seeing it, you know, unseasonably warm in most places now.
Joe Morgan, Hall of Famer, with us on the Scott Van Pelt Show with Ryan Russillo on ESPN Radio. One of those early home runs, the first swing of his major league career, Jason Hayward of the Atlanta Braves. What do you see when you see this kid play baseball?
Well, when I got a chance I did an exhibition game right at the end, and I had a chance to talk to him. I mean, he's more impressive when you talk to him than when you look at him. You look at this guy, this specimen of a baseball player. I mean, he looks great, and he's a great kid. He knows where he's got his head screwed on straight, and a lot of it had to do with his family background. We talked about his family and brothers and so forth, so he comes from a well-rounded family. And when you watch him, he hits the ball so hard, and that was the one thing Bobby Cox and I talked about. I watched him take batting practice, and he hits the ball harder, Bobby said, than anybody he knew. I mean, he just hits it so hard. So that's going to be a key. See, he looks like he's built like Darryl Strawberry, except he has a lot shorter, quicker swing. So he can wait a little longer, and that's why his pitch selection is so good. This kid's going to be a great player is all I can tell you. I mean a great player.
We've seen a lot of young players that have been hyped up, and we've talked about this a bit today on the show, deliver. It feels like they deliver more now to kind of match the hype as opposed to maybe years in the past. Do you feel that way? Do you feel like some of the next stars are becoming stars quicker than maybe in the years in the 80s and 90s where it felt like so many guys were misses?
There's no doubt there is, Ryan, and I think the reason is because their confidence levels, when they come into the big leagues, they feel like they belong. And a lot of it, I think, is because they've had a chance to really watch more games on TV now than they did, you know, when they were growing up. When I grew up, you know, we'd see every Saturday, you know. Now you can watch a game every night. And I think you feel more comfortable with the players that you're going to play against and the people in the big leagues. Whereas before, you know, Willie Mays was so far away from me, you know, that it was unbelievable. I'd see him, you know, play a game once every 2 weeks or something. So I think there's no doubt in my mind that the young players today are better prepared when they get here to the major leagues as far as the superstars are concerned. Now, when we talk fundamentals, I'll have to go back, and that's another story for another day. But as far as their ability and the fact that they're not afraid, I don't think they ever fear, you know, failure here anymore. And I think that was the case before. Even when I came to the big leagues, I was afraid I didn't want to fail. Mm-hmm. I don't think they think about that anymore.
Joe, I want to end with this thought, because you know what a huge sports fan you are, and every week we visit with you, every now and then we have some different topics. But with Tiger teeing off tomorrow, how much attention are you going to be paying to his weekend at Augusta?
A lot. I'm going to be paying a lot. Look, I think it's tragic what has happened to him. Obviously, he brought it on himself. But I feel it's tragic because, to me, a great athlete, you know, and someone like Tiger comes on along once every 100 years. And for this to happen, it just bothers me a lot, and also because I know him.
Well, what bothers you specifically? What part of the story?
Well, what bothers me is the fall from grace. Mm-hmm. You know, here was a guy that was walking on water, you know, every place he went. Now he's trying to, you know, stay alive swimming. He's trying to stay afloat. And it bothers me because look, like I said, he did what he did. He brought it on himself. But I just know when he's a special athlete, and I don't care if it was Tiger, I don't care if it's John Doe or whomever, when they have the ability that he had and displayed it day in and day out under pressure and so forth, I think it's tragic, you know, when something like this happens.
Joe, we're really looking forward to your visits every week this season, and enjoy your first weekend, your full weekend of baseball.
I'm looking forward to it every week also, Ryan, and we'll have to get Scott for going to Masters without us.
Yeah, I'm sure you're probably on a plane to go visit him, you guys.
No, I'm not going this year, but thanks again.
Log on to ESPN.com/podcenter or ESPNradio.com for more great podcasts.